Om Shanti. It's a lovely chance to share when someone asked me if I'd share something. I said, are you going to give me a topic? She said, no, share something that you feel comfortable with, which is a bit of a relief. sorry? Is that better? Can you hear? I know I have to speak. If I speak too quickly, give me a wave because you're translating. So, okay. And this kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, whether it's a topic really, but it's something that is very integral to our BK life. And it's something I've been thinking about for some time. One of the first meetings I had with Baba, practically, he said, don't think too much. let Baba do the thinking and let Baba take the responsibility. And I then spent about probably 25, 30 years thinking about what Baba meant by not thinking too much, which is quite funny. And it's very lovely just sharing in a small group like this. The first year we came, actually, Moin and myself, 76, it was the first big group of foreigners. A few had come the year before. Brother Nick and Denise came a bit, Charlie and Ken. I think there was 35 of us, and that was the big group. So it's practically the whole of the double foreigners just about here in this room. And so I find it is amazing how Baba's done everything. And you know, when you listen to the seniors talk, this is the really key thing that I find is coming through, that I'm really trying to work on in a sense of an aspect of cleanliness, is that it is Baba that's doing everything, has been doing everything, and will continue to do everything, even with our efforts. It's like and this Sister Mahini, Sister Mahini's been sharing for some time now on the Avyakti Parivar channel, and if you haven't come across that, I really recommend it. It's very nice, but you know, she was really emphasizing that Baba's the bestower, and so Baba's constantly giving, but it's our capacity to take that determines how much power I'm getting. So it's nothing to do with Baba. Is it okay? Yeah, okay. Not too fast? Okay. And that really made me think, you know, even coming down, I was chatting with Surajbhai earlier, and he has so many talks and stuff. And I said, how much preparation do you do? He said, oh, 5 minutes before, it's fine now. And I thought, wow. I said, I like to think about things. But I was saying to Baba, come and be with me so we can share something that's useful. And then the thought sort of came back, I am with you. I'm constantly with you. It's whether you're with me. That's... you know, we're talking about the mind. I saw a beautiful cartoon. It was about mindfulness. I don't know how that, in Russian, I don't know if that translates as mindful, but there was two pictures. One was a dog, and in the thought bubble for the dog was just a tree and a bone. And in the thought bubble for the guy who was taking the dog on the lead, his thought bubble was filled with like hundreds of different things. And so it was saying to be mindful or to have your mind full. And one of the things that the seniors are really emphasizing, and it's something I've been really, it feels a really important thing to do and connected to tonight's topic of spring cleaning the mind, is to see, you know, what it is that I need to keep in my mind. How much do I need to keep in my mind? How much details do I need to go into? Because, you know, once something comes into your mind, then you've got to, if it's not useful to you, you've then got to take it out of your mind. So if you see something that's not useful, or you hear something that's not useful, maybe you taste something, I don't know, with all the senses, once it's in, then you've got to get it out. And while you're putting some energy to get it out, it's not so easy to be connected to Baba. So, I did jot down a few notes, because... So, we go on till what, 8:30, is that right? Tonight's class? 8:30? Okay, so what about a definition of dirt? Because it is spring in India, and actually I phoned our guys at the centre, they said it's really cold. I said, oh dear, well it's just starting to change now, and the temperature's coming up to a very pleasant, warm, sunny day. Oh, don't tell us, Dave. But it is like spring, and I don't know if every country they do this, but spring cleaning is the time where you get everything out and clean everything. And I know here, you know, you'll see all the, I call them Baba's little cleaner children. You know, the girls, the sisters that do all the cleaning, you know, and they take everything out, the mattresses go out, and they go out onto the verandas, and they get cleaned and everything. So it's a nice time to be thinking about it, but I was actually starting to think, well, what actually is dirt? You know, what is the definition of cleaning? And of course, as you do, you kind of, we know what Baba says, but sometimes it's quite interesting. What does it mean to clean? Hello? What does it mean to clean? Or definition of clean? Ali? Get rid of unwanted items. So that's another aspect of spring cleaning. Rachel, we were talking about this yesterday, about decluttering. Gosh, that's, you know, what to hold on to. Yeah, Ali, you were going to say something.
So, like, you have a kurta which is dirty?
Yeah.
So you clean it?
You clean it. Okay. So first of all, it's clean. So where does the dirt come from? So the dirt is something, yeah, that's coming from outside, yeah.
So
returning to the original state, yeah. I mean those points that Baba's been talking about, hasn't he? You know those points for February or January, can't you? All those points about purity and cleanliness. They're so beautiful. So yes, I would say that the cleanliness, which Baba was really equating with purity and cleanliness, is to be in our original state. Yes, to remove dirt, dust, any marks, yeah. And something that's clean is not dirty. There's no dirt. Now, some of you, you know, may know possibly more than me, but you know, this idea of cleaning the mind, the question is which bit of the mind are we cleaning? Because, you know, we've got the conscious mind, which we can see, which is the, you know, the screen of the mind, and I mean, I don't know about you, but even after a long, long time with Baba, will just keep coming. And, you know, I think if you're just going to be cleaning the mind, cleaning the mind, cleaning the mind, it's going to be kind of an endless process. And something that I'm really working on, and again, I was saying to Rachel about this the other day, you know, it's like I get an email, and as soon as I see the email, I read it, and then I'm writing the email in my mind. Does anyone else do that? It's like, it almost takes, and I maybe write it a couple of times, and I'm thinking, hang on, David, that's not an urgent email, because a lot of BKs don't know the difference between urgent and important. And actually, that's quite important to understand, that probably most emails are fairly important, some more important than others, but most emails are not urgent. And I remember a peace of mind some years back, there was someone, it was a fax, so that kind of dates it, doesn't it? He said, BK ran up and said, oh, there was an urgent fax came for you yesterday, I'll give it to you tomorrow. So, first thing, useful to know the difference between urgent and important. But just on that, I was thinking, gosh, I've started a process now where I'm starting to talk to my mind, because I think extra thoughts is kind of, it's dirt, it's clutter, it's not useful. And I'm having to start that conversation where I'm talking to myself, David, are you going to do this email now? No. Okay. So, do you need to think about the reply to it now? No. Okay. So, we're not going to think about it now, right? Okay, good. And then the mind, or the conscious mind, like kids, and I work with kids, you know, in a dental setting, because I was a children's dentist. And children are a kind of, they're gorgeous. But, you know, it's like, you know, your mums or your dads who've got kids, you know, the kid will run up to you and say, is it time to go to the park yet to play? And the dad or mum will say, no, after dinner, darling. And then, okay. And then about 5 or 10 minutes later, the child will come back and, is it time to go to the park yet? I don't know, after dinner. And I didn't realise, and then someone told me that like a young child doesn't really have that sense of time like we do. Sorry?
Are we there yet?
They don't have a sense of timing. But they're very... And actually, I'm reading a book at the moment, How to Master the Mind, and it's a Lockick book, but the things in it are really, really quite interesting, and I hadn't realised that a child up to a certain age, maybe 4, 5, possibly 6, I'm not sure, if your child educationists here, some of you, you'll know better, but they don't really have like discerning and deciding. You know, like a conscious mind, it like it thinks, it decides, it's kind of rational, it's very reasoning. But a young child doesn't really do that. And a young child will just act on kind of instinct, basically. And the thing along with that is, it works on like the subconscious, it just works on kind of what's coming out there. And those of you who know about a little bit about the subconscious, obviously, is the bit you can't see. Now, probably in BK terms, we'd call that samskaras. So, I think when we're talking about cleaning, we're probably talking about cleaning out the samskaras. Some of you will remember one of Baba Smalley's, so some years ago, Baba would say, how can you recognize your samskaras? Baba would say, by your reactions. So when someone says something and you kind of react, then that's an indication that there's something down there that's unhealed. You know, you get an example, like you've got a sore on your arm and someone brushes against you and goes, ow, you know, you hurt me. Ooh. Actually, it wasn't that they hurt you. There's something there that's sore, that's unhealed, and they touched it, and that's why it hurt. And some scars may be a little bit like that. So there's something down there, and something's coming in from outside, and it's touching something, and it kind of produces a reaction. So that's how we can see that there's something down there that needs healing or cleaning. Because I was also thinking, you know, there's different if we're talking about spring cleaning, there's different layers of cleaning, isn't there? There's like a superficial clean, you know, you can a light dust, and then you've got these companies that do deep cleaning, you know, where they come and everything's right back to the walls and it's sprayed and cleaned and disinfected. And of course, one of the big plus things about Madhuban at the moment is because of plus things about COVID is that you know, there's a lot more attention to hygiene and cleaning. I mean, it was difficult to find a bar of soap in Madhuban previously, except when we get visitors. But now there's soap everywhere, and there's the hand gel everywhere. So that's kind of, you know, it's kind of a positive thing from COVID. But going back, like deep cleaning, you're going right down and you're going right back, as you say, Rachel, right back to what's original. Because if you think about, like, something that's clean, I don't know, it feels nice, doesn't it? And you think, you know, I mean, I know for myself, if my mind isn't totally focused on, like, it's a morning when I'm supposed to be doing emails and office work, and I'm not really an office. I've never worked in an office, so. And that's a funny thing. When you become a BK and you start taking some responsibility for service, just because you're looking after a centre or helping to look after a centre, people think you can do everything. And I have to remind myself, I've never worked in an office. I don't know about office systems. You're expecting me to be this high-flying thing. And I must admit, I do my emails, but they're not my number one thing. And so I'm having to train myself, and I think this is another aspect of cleanliness. You know, can I love my emails? Can I do my emails with as much interest as I wonder what the football results are, you know? I wonder what the cricket results are. And, you know, I'm a great gardener and I love growing things, and we've got a little, very small patch of land, and I go off and grow stuff. And when I'm going there, I feel so happy and very joyful, and I think, and now I've got, and then I have to come back and do my emails. And so one aspect of cleanliness for me is doing everything with the same feeling. And of course, the shift from that is that it's Baba's work. You know, I'm not going to repeat all those dozens of points we've been reading after class, but it's very clear, you know, I-ness, it's my responsibility, I have to do it. And then what comes with that is the uncleanliness or the dirt of burden. Sort of, you know, one thing is to do things responsibly, and Baba likes that, you know, to be very responsible in what we do, but feeling responsible in a negative way, where I feel a burden or a pressure, that's very unhelpful, and it takes all the pleasure out of Brahmin life, and we all do it, and we've all done it, and it's something that I'm really working on, that I'm doing this for Baba. Well, okay, I'm doing it for Baba, I'm doing it for myself, really, but I'm doing this because of my love for Baba. I'm not doing it for myself. And if I can move in that direction, then that feels clean. Yeah? Okay, right. Yeah, deep cleaning, okay. And like at Diwali, they do that, don't they? You know, those, it's, you know, they say Lakshmi will only come if everything's cleaned and all stuff like that. Right, okay. So, now, this thing about the subconscious, I think it's kind of fascinating. Now, you know, years back when we did the self-managing leadership stuff, you know, it's a very old example, you know, with the iceberg. And the iceberg is a useful example for the mind, isn't it? Because it's, I don't know, percentage, 10, 15% above the water and most of it's below. And, you know, the example where the wind is blowing this way and the iceberg's going in the opposite direction. And the reason for that is? Sorry? The wind is blowing this way, so you'd expect the iceberg to be going this way, but the iceberg's moving in the other way. Why is that, brothers and sisters? Because there's a current underneath. So, you know, it's a useful example. So there's a current underneath which you can't see, which is stronger than the force of the wind. And I haven't read the book, but in the book I'm reading, it was giving a very interesting example of the, to make it easy, a little bit easier to understand. It's giving an example of the conscious mind being like an ant, and the subconscious mind being like an elephant. And the idea of an ant is, it's just here, there, everywhere, and it's so the ant wants to reach its oasis. It wants to reach its sort of place where it feels fully satisfied. Because when you're an ant and you're running around here, there, and everywhere, you don't get that sense of satisfaction. And if you're not feeling satisfaction with whatever I'm doing, especially Baba's work and all of us doing Baba's work, then that doesn't feel clean. It feels like it's a sense of dirt. And the ant was getting very frustrated, and there was an owl, and the owl said, "How can I do things? I want to go towards my oasis." And he said, "Well, it's no problem. You can reach your oasis. You can reach this state. The only problem is you're on the back of an elephant." So the ant, the conscious mind, is on the back of an elephant, which is the subconscious mind. And he said, "You want, your oasis is west, but unfortunately, your elephant is moving east. And so no matter how much you try to move west, you're always going to end up going east." And so I haven't read the book, but I must admit I was curious. It's called The Ant and the Elephant. Apparently it's, I don't know who's written it, but you can Google it. Sorry, was someone? Did that sister behind you, Rachel, want to ask any? Oh, okay. So I might have a little nosy on that. It sounds like an interesting book. But the analogy of the elephant being the subconscious, so it doesn't reason and decide. It just moves. It just moves. Whereas the conscious mind goes through all the, you know, should I do this, should I do this, should I do this, what's the best thing? And it kind of goes round and round and can create a lot of mental heat. And the other example that he was given in the book, which is something which, again, those of you with children, you know, one of the things that I've come across before, and I find it quite interesting, and it feels really important in terms of cleaning the mind, and particularly cleaning the subconscious. It's apparently the subconscious doesn't really hear not or know. You know, all the words connected to know. And so, you know, mothers are trying to be very helpful so that the kids got a glass of milk and the mother will say, "Don't spill the milk. Do not spill the milk." What happens? You know, don't do this. Don't, like, okay, play a little bit of golf. And if there's a hazard on the left hand side, if you give the instruction to your mind, say there's a pond there, and you have to hit the ball straight in this direction. If you say, "Don't hit." David, do not hit the ball left into the lake. Apparently, I don't know, the subconscious doesn't hear the not. The subconscious just hears hit the ball into the lake. So the ball goes into the lake, and so you know, with children, it doesn't work saying, giving them the instruction, "Don't do this, you know, don't do that, don't be naughty, don't do this." It only works, you have to give the instruction, which is the positive. So if you don't, you know, if you say to the child, you know, "Don't run out into the road, it's dangerous," then the child will kind of just run out. So you have to say, you know, "Stay here, it's safer." So for me, when I was kind of thinking about what... cleaning the mind, this is like a really key thing to do, to check that I'm not giving myself negative directions, like and actually in the Morley it's quite challenging because Baba says, you know, "Don't do this, don't do that." But if we actually use the that example with ourselves, it doesn't work. And it feels very uncomfortable, and it feels it takes the pleasure out of things. So each one of us has to find a way. Like if we want to do something, okay. So like, say, that Morley on Sunday was just the last Sunday's Morley, wasn't it? Where Baba went through all the different things about. Uncleanliness in our mind. I mean, you know, okay, be entertaining, but only at the right time, in the right atmosphere, with the right person. And if you're entertaining in the wrong way, then that comes under the category of negativity. And I thought, oh gosh, you know, that's me a little bit. You know, I'm always quite telling jokes and things and actually seeing the limits. So I was really thinking, you know, I can't say I must not, you know, do this, I must not do that, because what happens? I become serious and that doesn't work. I mean, I've done this. The worst thing you can do is get heavy about making efforts. And I can remember many, many years ago, do you find that we have such a deep desire to make good efforts to clean out everything that sometimes it becomes tension, right? Probably in Russia there's no tension, is there? Mm-hmm. Any tension in Russia? No. Yes. You know, and Baba's clever, isn't he? I mean, he plays around with words, you know, put the A for the soul in front of tension, it becomes attention. Which is, it's a nice idea, but I have to actually practice it. And once I used to get so nervous and tense about talking. I mean, like having to do a talk like this years ago, I'd think about it and think about it and get so tense. And I had a little conversation with Brother Nevers. This was many years ago when we had the fortune of meeting Baba personally. And I was just, Brother Nevers in those days was like the mentor of the foreigners, and Sister Sheila. And I said, I get so anxious when I have to talk or do some service, and it's like, it's hardwired into my stomach. He said, "Okay, brother." So after Baba had been finished meeting the groups and things, He goes, David, because Brother Neville sort of goes, David. And they plonk me down in front of Papa, and he told Papa, Papa, Dada, I said, you rotter, that was just between you and me. And and I can still remember, you know, Baba would like smile, and then, and he said, nothing new is to be done. Everything is already done. You just simply have to repeat what you've done before. And for about, I think about 20 to 30 years, every time I would have to do a talk or do something, I'd be repeating nothing new has to be done. Everything's already done, everything's already done, and I'd still feel nervous because it's like hardwired into the system. And you know, I can still remember years ago when one of the BK friends, Anthea Church, bless her, it was 25 years service in Leeds, which was quite a big thing in those days. And I'd made some notes, and I was introducing. And I don't know about you, but giving a little talk or sharing is easy. Could you make a few points? But when you're actually introducing, you've got to. And just before I was about to stand up, walk onto the stage, she sort of grabbed my notes and said, oh, don't do that. That's my comfort blanket. Because I did have one experience once when I was asked to do a talk in India. It was in a health context. And I had made some notes and I just kept them with me. And when I got there, I was really glad that I had, because I was expecting maybe 20, 30, 40 people, and when I walked in, it was a hall like twice the size of this, and it was completely full. And in English we say, well, I got stage fright. My mind went blank, and luckily I had made notes. Now the thing is, you know, BKs say, you know, Baba says you should give talks and things without making notes, but my advice is just make some notes, and maybe you don't need them. I mean, even Sister Jenty, you've heard her experience when she was being trained by one of the brothers, and she was giving a talk, because I think she was probably one of the few seniors that could speak English in those days when she was in India. And the brother asked her, what are you going to speak about? She said, oh, I'm just going to remember Baba, and Baba will put some thoughts in my mind and I'll just speak. And the brother said, no, that won't work. You won't be able to say anything. You have to write it down. And there's, you know, the story she's told, that he would make her write it down two or three times. And actually quite often when you do that, sometimes you use those points and sometimes you don't. Sometimes your thoughts do change, but so I was really glad that I'd made those notes. Now, the interesting thing is that many years later, I feel really comfortable sharing, because I thought, actually, every Brahmin, each one of you could be up here and can share something on this topic or any topic, and there would be something that would be useful for someone else, right? That's why we meet as a family and share. And I just thought, no, actually, it's okay. The worst thing you can do is look a fool or forget, and then that's okay. It might help you become more self-conscious if you get embarrassed. But I thought otherwise. And then as I started to realize, I thought, no, actually, I think I've got something useful to say, and hopefully it'll be useful for one or two people. And what I noticed, I would still get tense, my stomach would churn up, my mouth would go dry, I would feel like I just wanted to run out, and, you know, just. And yet I thought that it was a really interesting observation, because I thought, actually, I said, Baba, I'm actually feeling quite cool and calm inside. And yet, and that's when I realized that all these thought patterns and the feelings that go with them are then hardwired into the into the, you know, literally into the body. Because now, I mean, we know with like brain science and all stuff like that, literally every thought and every feeling we have is affecting every single cell in the body, and that's pretty much science now. And of course these get hardwired into the body, and it was a really interesting and very useful thing for me to realize that even though I was feeling okay about it, but there was the elephant part of me that was hardwired was trying to tell me that I was nervous and anxious, and that was actually translated into the body. And that was, I mean, it's a useful thing to be able to see, because then I thought, okay, why is that? It's a habit, right? It's become so ingrained that it's just working without thinking. You know, and we use that expression, I don't know probably whether you have that expression in Russia or whatever language, but you know, so you do something and I did it without thinking. You just do something, and that's what habits are. In fact, have any of you heard the habit poem? Some of you may. I came across this when I was doing a little bit of reading to do a talk on habit, and I think this is quite relevant to our topic of cleaning, you can just Google it. If you put the habit poem, it'll come up. And the reason I felt okay about reading a few notes, so, is that I saw a couple of my seniors having some notes on their thing. I thought, that's okay. Because we last year in Leeds, we did a public talk and a short meditation every week. So before lockdown, we were doing like one talk a month. And during lockdown, we did 52. And Rachel, you know, Sarah does all the IT. So it's like she said, David, it's like an hour's preparation. And then you breeze in and talk. And then we've got to get all the stuff and record and put on YouTube, you know, put on Facebook. And so we suddenly became like ants. We were rushing around, the sisters actually came to me and said, David, can we have a month off? Can we not do a talk? And bless them, they said, we want a break. So they found a little quiet place by the sea somewhere, went off for 2 or 3 days, and I thought, wow, I thought that's pretty enlightened. That they actually said, realize that you can become a BK ant, not just a Lockick ant, because the guy who wrote this book is like, he's doing, I suppose, you know, he's doing training and stuff with big companies and all this, and how to be more efficient and all that. But his catch thing is, if you want to speed up, you have to slow down. I thought, that's an interesting one. If you want to speed up, in other words, if you want to get more done, and, you know, like in our case, if you want to make faster efforts, somehow we have to slow down so we're not rushing. And, you know, we had dear old Daddy Jenky with us for many, many years in the UK, very fortunate, really. And, you know, she would always, once outside one of the centres, there was an accident, and Daddy was obviously thinking about that, and she used this expression which really went in strong. She said, if you want to move fastly, then you have to be patient, and those who are patient will move fast. And you know the thing where you're rushing, and you rush and you make a mistake. And I had to train myself to do this when I was working, because I was working with 25, 30 kids, and when I was working, we did get what I call some normal kids, but mostly the kids I was treated were the kids that most of the dentists wouldn't or couldn't treat because they had behavior problems or they're anxious. And so if you made a mistake, like if you tried to do something and it wasn't possible and the kid kind of lost it, then you could, you know, you could be very, very late. So I had to really make sure, I had to train myself to rush, not to rush. And it's really important. I mean, I can remember once we used to do chairside dental anesthetics, which is not a pretty sight, you know, kids coming in and having quite a lot of teeth taken out. The anaesthetist was half an hour late for the session because he'd had an emergency, and so we were starting half an hour late and we had a lot of kids to get through, and the nurses thought they were going to finish late and they said, come on David, come on, get, and I remember thinking, I said, Baba, I can't rush, and I actually turned to one of the nurses and I said, how would you feel if you were bringing your child into the surgery and they're going to have a chairside anaesthetic, which actually is not a very safe procedure, it's quite a risky procedure. How would you feel if you're bringing your kid in and you're thinking that the team is rushing because they want to make sure that they're not late? And they kind of looked at me and didn't say anything. Said, okay. And I remember thinking, I said, okay, Baba, we better do some service here. I said, please let me really focus down. And so I really focused down. And they noticed, actually, that we only finished the session about 5-10 minutes over. And that's when... I realized that if you want to speed up, if you want to get things done, somewhere you've got to slow down. And it's slowing the mind down, and it's staying close to our original state of peace. And that's when I can do things quicker. And my observation is, I think that's how the seniors can hold a lot and get things done. Because the mind's very clean, the mind's very focused, and so extra thinking, overthinking, I mean wasteful thinking, I mean, you know, you asked Surya Bhai to give a class on that, he'll probably give about 15-20 points on that. It's a very popular topic, wasteful, overcoming wastefulness, but all of those things just mean I'm not efficient. So in your own way, I'd really have a look at slowing your mind down. Okay, so I was going to read the habit poem, wasn't I? Right. So let me do that. And why I think this is really important is that we've got to change our habits. And we tell people on the courses, don't we? You've created the habit so you can change it. So the same thing applies to us. Okay, let's see if Baba wants me to read this, because why is that not disappearing? Okay. Oh, yeah, that's it. Oh, yeah, okay. Okay. Okay, so this is the habit poem. It's quite short. I am your constant companion. I am your greatest helper, or I'm your greatest burden. I will push you onward, or I will drag you down to failure. I am completely at your command. Half of the things you do, you might as well turn over to me. And I will do them quickly and correctly. when you start looking, researching about habits, I don't know the percentage, 50, 60, 70%, we don't think consciously, we just do. And that's absolutely fine if it's a good habit, but if we're doing things without thinking that are not so good, not so useful, then somehow I've got to change my habits by making the conscious become... Because have we created the subconscious just by the conscious? It's just repeated, right? Okay, so half the things you do, you might as well turn over to me. I will then do them quickly and correctly. I'm easily managed, but you must be firm with me. Show me exactly how you want something to be done. And after a few lessons, I will do it automatically. I am servant of great people and also of failures. Those who are failures, I have made failures. And those who are great, I have made great. But I'm not a machine, although I work with the precision of a machine, plus the intelligence of a person. You can run me for profit or run me for ruin, it makes no difference to me. So this is the bit that's probably the how-to, which is probably more interesting. Take me, train me, be firm with me, and I will place the world at your feet. But be easy with me, and I will destroy you. So who am I? Well, I've already told you, I am habit. So, I kind of like that. Okay, so I'm just looking at the time. So, okay, so in essence, all the dirt, all the uncleanliness, it's gone from conscious to subconscious, and it's become an elephant, and it's just moving us in ways that maybe we don't want, and therefore we have to reverse that. And that has to be done by, in my experience, deep, repetitive attention. You know, if you get a golf coach and you're learning how to hold the club, you know, you have to hold it in a certain way. If it's someone new, he'll say, okay, put the club, your golf club, by your front door. Every time you come in, just hold the club, maybe, you know, 10, 15 times each day, just hold the club. If it's a golfer that's got into a bad habit, instead of hitting the ball straight, he's hooking it left, that coach will tell that golfer, every time you see the club, pick it up at least 100 times a day. So the point being that if you've got into a bad habit, you have to do more reps or more repetitions than right. So what do you reckon? Are old sun scars good habits or bad habits? So ultimately we've got to do what they say in sport, you've got to do the reps, you've got to repeat. Because I was actually talking to a golf coach, and he was watching. He said, David, did you play cricket? I said, yes, I was pretty good at cricket. He said, yes, I know, your golf swing is a cricket stroke, and look, I've just filmed you, watch this. And I said, he said, now, he said, you've got to practice a golf swing. And I said, yes, practice makes perfect, doesn't it? And he goes, no, practice doesn't make perfect. He said, perfect practice makes perfect. Imperfect practice makes imperfect. When I was learning to drive many years ago, it was an ex-police police driver instructor, and he hammered into me, exactly the sequence. And I can remember, I was only 17 at the time, this is way before Baba. He said, David, whatever habit, driving habit, you create now, you're going to have that with you for life. And it's going to be very difficult to change. So I'm afraid I'm going to hammer you. And again, he said, nope. Mirror, signal, maneuver. And again and again. So with deep-rooted sanskars, or which is basically, I've got to make sure that I'm repeating, but I'm doing it in the correct way. Now, you know, Baba basically, just one thing before we finish, thoughts create feelings, so I find it easier, sometimes the thoughts just run, but I find it easier to see how I'm feeling, to identify how I'm feeling, and then I can change that. Yeah? You can see your thoughts sometimes, but like sometimes, if I'm feeling a bit apprehensive or a bit tense, then I know that there's something that isn't of the original state going on in me, and then I can change that. And you know, I'm sure we'll get lots of classes on purifying our feelings, but for me, that's the real work. Have you had this experience where you've seen someone and they've said something a little bit funny? Might even be like one of the seniors. And the memory of that stays with you. And when you think about them, when you see them again, I saw someone who wasn't, but they were sort of what I call middle-ranking senior. They were a little bit quick with someone, and it went in. And then for many years, every time I saw them, this thought came, ooh, they're a bit... So that's dirt, isn't it? And once then I sat with them, and then they were so sweet, so lovely, and they said, do you know, just on an odd occasion, I get really quick, and I feel so bad about it. And I was thinking, oh my God, for all these years, I've been thinking about this self, and oh gosh, you know, she's a bit bad-tempered. And actually, it was completely the opposite, but I just focused down on that little bit of dirt, and And what I'm doing here in Madhuban, I've noticed there's quite a few of those things in relationship to some souls. And when that comes up, I'm then changing that. And I'm taking the points out of, you know, the points that we've got. Like, this is a beautiful, pure, this soul is beautiful and pure in their original and their eternal form. And they are so nice and they are so sweet. And I just keep, and then the mind says, yeah, you're joking, they're a bit grumpy. And then I said, okay, play it again, Sam. And again, this soul is very pure, eternally and originally pure. And basically, I wrote it down so I didn't forget it. But, you know, I am originally and eternally a pure soul. I mean... That's it, really. I was pure. I am pure. And I will be pure eternally. Oh, so hum. And I just keep repeating that. Till you believe it. Because for the double foreigners, I think particularly, we have a self-respect and a self-esteem problem. The Baba is telling us, you are this, you are this, you are this, you are this, and it's it. And we go, yes, but, yes, but, yes, but. And we don't believe it, and it takes a deep thing, like, to move, and I think for me this is the cleaning process, in essence, to go from conscious to subconscious, because we're going from, like before we came to Baba, we were unconsciously unconscious. I don't know if that's going to translate. We were asleep, but we didn't know we were asleep. And then probably for most of us here, we started to become a little bit aware or conscious that we're most of the time were unconscious, were asleep. Yeah? Did you have that experience? And, you know, waking up is a sort of a synonym or another way of saying becoming aware. And then with meditation and Baba's knowledge, we are then we're having to consciously become conscious of I am originally and eternally a pure soul, or whatever you want to take from Baba Smalley. And if I keep repeating that and believing it and practicing it, eventually, I guess, we'll become like in the Golden Age, where we'll become unconsciously aware of who we are. Does that make sense to the Russians? So we will have gone from unconsciously asleep to being consciously awake, and that's our practice. I think that's what meditation is, isn't it? Training the awareness to be conscious of what Baba says and to be conscious of the original sanskars. And then hopefully at the end of the confluence age, we'll become angels, and in essence, angel means not just pure thoughts, but clean feelings, right? All our feelings will have been cleaned, because I think purification is the same as cleaning. And then in the Golden Age, we will be just unconsciously clean. So that's the process. I'm going to stop there, because time's running. Okay. I think that's how it becomes the form. So how do I become the form of something? I think. So we create those thoughts, and that gradually, those thoughts create my awareness. And if I then keep in that awareness that Baba is saying, then gradually that will become my swarup. So I will become, the form of the self will become that. I'm not just repeating it, I feel that, and that's our journey. Okay, so, is there any comments? Did that make any sense? Yeah. So actually it's quite simple. It's not difficult, we just have to do it. So remember where the golfers who've got into bad habits, where the tennis players who are keep hitting the ball in the wrong direction, and so we've got it. That's why we have to do more practice than anyone else, and we've got to do perfect practice. Yes, Lalita. Yeah, I don't know if it's being recorded. So. You can put it on the bottom, I think. Down the bottom. Anyway, speak loudly.
You were mentioning about that one medium senior that you saw and...
middle ranking senior.
Okay, so you saw her once, just being quick, and it stayed with you, and then she said to you, I want to finish this and whatever. So my question to you is that, why do we so easily pick up the negative and remember that negative rather than that all the other positive things that soul has done, and we know that.
Can you hear?
And we see one negative thing maybe,
yeah,
and it sticks to us, like you said, in the mind. Mm. And we know that soul has done a lot of positive things, and we've seen that. So I think maybe it is one, our own...
Yeah.
I think it is. I want to purposely see the negative so that I don't put up that person.
Okay, I'm going to repeat the question because I'm not sure. Why do we remember the negative more easily than the positive? I think in essence is that we've become weak, that we've just lost power. And that's why the whole process of... like. What did Baba say in the Mali the other day? It was beautiful. I'm coming to teach you the power of Raj Yoga. It was the most... I don't know if that was the accurate Hindi translation, but it was a translation into English, but it was a very interesting phrase, the power of Raj Yoga. And again, you know, going back to this thing, our original state is powerful, and weakness is when I disconnect from my power. Just like peacelessness is a disconnect from peace. So basically, it's not difficult. Just have to get back to my original state, but I think that's the essence. So, you know, the homework I think that I'm working on, and I think we all need to work on, is how do I translate Baba's knowledge, which we love, and our faith and our trust in Baba, how do we translate that back into power? Then I think it becomes easier. And in my experience, it's also, I have to train myself. I can remember there was one instance when, you know, it was a middle-ranking senior. It was just a little bit out of character. And someone actually mentioned that it was Brother Niver. They mentioned it to Brother Niver. It was in a class. And, you know, he just repeated what Baba said. Even if someone has 99 weaknesses, they have one speciality, and our job is to focus on the speciality, because if I'm seeing weakness at that point, I'm not soul conscious. That's the bottom line. And so my work in to purify and clean my feelings has to be, even if I see that, I just think, oh, they're out of their truth today, or the, you know, their energy levels down, and that's okay. But otherwise, they're a beautiful soul, and that's the work we have to do. And of course, the mind, like the child, it'll just keep. Now they're not. They're a miserable soul, so they're always tetchy. They're always miserable. And I just, with the mind, I just say, I'm sorry, because being listening to what other people say and listening to your old mind is dirt. That's not cleanliness. We have to. So I just, when my mind tries to tell me something, oh, David, you always do that. And I say, excuse me, Mr. Mind, I don't always do that. I sometimes do that. And I'm trying not to do it sometimes. But don't tell me I always do it. Because sometimes people say, oh, David, you're always doing that. I said, no. So we shouldn't listen to what the mind is saying. And we should also be very discerning about what other people say, and say, well, I tell my mind, this is what you tell me about myself, and can I just remind you of what Baba thinks about me? And then I rehearse a couple of lines from the Morley, and I say, this is what Baba thinks of me. And then I just keep repeating it. And if the mind keeps trying to tell me something else, I just repeat it until gradually it becomes quiet. Often Hindus say, chup, chup, guru, be quiet. Shh. Right, so I think I should finish there now. It's time for meditation. Sister Mira has come. So I'm going to stop and hand over. What, you're shaking, yeah? Okay, so I hope it's been useful, some of the things, and it's been useful for me to think about it. Okay, Om Shanti.